There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast. Greg, today we are going to talk about tax.
Yep, it's getting to that time of year.
Yeah, so I guess I've just gone right through the intros altogether.
Yeah, well, I mean, anyone who's listening knows who we are.
Yeah, we are on episode 284.
Oh,
okay. Just so you know.
It's good.
So, yep. I don't know if you need to listen to 284 intros of the same banter.
That's true.
But, but yeah, today we're going to talk about tax because we're getting close to the end of the tax season.
Yep.
Tax year.
Yep.
And there's things that people need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Right. In preparing for the end of the year. And there's a lot of tax opportunities that expire on December 31st for investors. And
yep.
We want to talk about doing an annual financial tune-up. Yeah. Just being ready for it.
It's important enough. I mean, it's, you know, we've never let tax drive our investment decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, every dollar you can save in tax is a dollar in your pocket. So, it makes sense to spend some time thinking about it and making sure you take advantage of all opportunities and don't miss any opportunities, you know, until it's too late.
Yeah. So being good Canadians that we are,
yep.
We want to focus on things like RRSPs, right?
Yes.
So Registered Retirement Savings Plans.
That's right.
I'm sure our listeners know what RRSP means, but right. For those that don't, you know, we want to contribute to RRSPs to reduce taxable income.
That's right.
Right? And you can contribute till the end of December 31st for this tax season. But you also have 60 days of the next calendar year to contribute for this tax season.
Right. And many people do wait for that full 60 days. But, you know, when you think about it, the longer you can have your money invested and earning returns tax-free, probably the better.
Yeah.
So if you actually made your contributions early in the year, then you know, you might have better tax-free growth. The key thing is to make the RSP contribution.
Yeah.
But certainly the earlier, the better, just from the growth standpoint.
Yeah. And you can make a regular RSP contribution or you can make a spousal RSP contribution if you're married.
Sure.
Or in a common law situation. And if you're able to do that, sometimes you're able to balance out future tax liabilities, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you have contribution room and your spouse doesn't, you can use your contribution room to you know, contribute to the spouse's RSP, and that way you get the same tax benefit, but yeah, future income can be split basically between you and your spouse.
Yep. Now, some people might say, well, but if I max out my RSP contribution, I'm not going to be able to use all of the contribution for this year's income offset.
Right.
What would you say to people about that?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is, well, whatever you save, you know, whatever the deduction is dollars in your pocket.
Well, and
for a long period of time.
And you can use the deductions in future years too.
Sure you can.
Right? So if you have, I'm just going to throw a number, $50,000 in RSP contribution room.
Yeah.
Just happen to have $50,000.
Yeah.
But it's not tax advantageous to claim the whole $50,000 in this year.
Absolutely.
You can carry it forward.
For right? sure. Yeah.
And then the investments actually get to grow tax deferred longer too.
That's right.
Yep. Okay, what about TFSAs?
Yeah, well, TFSAs, the tax-free savings account, is just a wonderful savings vehicle that the government introduced back in 2009. And basically, you're allowed to contribute a certain maximum amount each year. This year, for 2025, the contribution room is $7,000. Have they announced? I believe they've announced 2026 at the same level. Is that?
I think so.
But over the years that it's been, you know, available, a lifetime limit is currently $103,000. So that's $103,000 that anybody who was eligible since 2009 could have parked away to earn returns totally tax-free.
Yeah.
And those returns are totally tax-free. So when you take the money out of the TFSA, there's no deferred tax. There's no limits on that. You can withdraw it. It'll have no effect on government benefits or other income that you might earn. So it's really just a fabulous way to save money tax-free. And it's only too bad that they didn't start this up, you know, 30 years sooner.
Yeah. And so we have had some people that don't like to take too much money out of their accounts because they don't want to have their OAS clawed back.
Yep.
So if you like you say, if you take it out of your TFSA, it's not going to impact that, right?
Exactly.
Speaking of which, I can't tell you how many times I've had people say to me, TSFA.
Yes.
Or the TISFA.
Right.
Yeah. Do you remember back in 2009, there was it Gordon Pape?
Yes.
Wrote a whole book on TFSA.
Yeah.
I was like, how did you fit a whole book on TFSA?
It's pretty straightforward. You could sort of sum it up in a couple of paragraphs.
Yeah. So for those that want to read the book, just don't. Just give us a call. We'll walk you through it.
Right? Exactly.
Okay. One other item that came up a few years ago is relatively new, is first home savings accounts.
Yes.
So you do have till December 31st to make a $8,000 contribution into an FHSA.
Right.
That $8,000 is then a tax deduction
to
the person making the contribution. And so, but this one is really important because you have to make a contribution before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Right? Or it doesn't carry forward, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you can carry forward a certain amount of room if it's unused. So you can make an $8,000 contribution, you know, in 1 year maximum. If you make a $5,000, you can carry that $3,000 forward, but I believe there's a limit on the number of years you can carry that forward.
Well, and I guess where I'm going with that is if you have a kid who's, 20.
Yep.
And you see them buying a house when they're, 30.
Yep.
Right? If you don't make any contribution before the end of December, then you lose that contribution room for this year.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
So even if you make a $1,000 contribution, the $7,000 carries forward.
That's right. You just need to make the contribution.
Yeah. So.
So let's talk a little bit more over why the first home savings account is so great. Well, first of all, you're allowed to save $40,000, so $8,000 a year for 5 years if you maxed it out. You're allowed to put aside $40,000. It grows tax-free while it's in the plan. It is a tax deduction, much like an RRSP, so the $8,000 or the $40,000 in total could be deducted from income when calculating your tax. When the money is used to buy a home, it comes out of the first home savings account tax-free, much like it does out of a tax-free savings account.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've managed to double your money, over the time it's invested, then you'll get $80,000 out, having put $40,000 in, no tax payable. If by some chance you don't buy a home with that money, you choose not to buy a home over time, you can transfer those funds into your RRSP. Mm-hmm. And therefore, even if you don't have any contribution room. And so then you've now kept those funds tax deferred, and of course you will pay tax on them when they come out, but it's a, you know, it's a fabulous way to increase the value of the RRSP. So there's not a whole lot of downside to making the first home savings account contributions.
Yeah, the only, and we've talked about this in the past, the only issue that we've run into is that if you have a 20-year-old and they've got RRSPs, TFSAs, FHSAs, most 20-year-olds can't max out all of the contributions, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to pick and choose what makes the most sense for you.
Exactly. And I think we can say, in general, for a 20-year-old, for example, they might not have a high level of income, and so the RRSP might be the thing that you defer.
Yeah.
Because you never lose the contribution room, and when you can claim those, you know, the contributions against a higher rate of income tax, then you get a better refund, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly it makes sense to start with the FHSA and the TFSA if you're in that position.
Okay, let's move on to capital gains and tax loss harvesting, because this is something that's going to be coming up in the next few weeks for a lot of our clients. You know, if you've realized gains this year, now is the time to check if you have any losing positions that you can sell to offset them, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's not to say that you're giving up on something. It's just you're making a tax decision to minimize your tax bill.
Yep.
And so sometimes we'll do things like, sell a bond position that's in a negative position currently.
Yep.
Right? And we actually want to hold that bond position.
Yep.
So what we'll do is we'll reinvest the proceeds into a different bond position for 30 days.
Yep.
And then move it back.
That's right.
Why do we wait the 30 days, Greg?
Well, that's because you want to avoid what's called the superficial loss rule. So the CRA considers if you sold something to claim a tax loss but bought it back within those 30 days, they will disallow the loss.
Yeah.
And so you just want to make sure that you're on side with CRA. So you want to be out of that identical position for at least 30 days after having sold it in order to claim this superficial loss against against gains. But then you want to get back into the position because it was there for a good reason in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing, and why would you want to take a loss? Well, because you're allowed to offset capital gains. You can carry that loss 3 years backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've triggered any capital gains in the previous 3 years, then this loss can recapture some tax that you've paid, and you can carry them those losses forward indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever expect to have positive returns and capital gains in the future, those losses will reduce the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so your example of selling bonds if they're down is an interesting one because those opportunities don't come up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bonds, as you know, are generally relatively stable, meaning they're not overly volatile. There is some volatility, but nothing like the volatility of the stock market. And so generally, we don't expect bonds to be a good source of tax losses. But if you think back to 2022, it was a devastating year. Well, bad for stocks, but a devastating year for bonds,
mm-hmm.
with the bond indexes down anywhere from 10 to 15%. So that was a wonderful opportunity to trigger some losses, use them to either offset gains that you might have realized in the stock markets from 2020 and 2021 or earlier. Or to carry those losses forward and look at how well the stock market has done recently.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's rebalancing might be triggering some gains, and you've now got these losses to carry forward and offset the gains. And again, those losses weren't real losses because we went and invested in very similar strategies. We just were able to claim them.
Yeah, it's an important strategy.
Yep.
And we've been doing a bit of that this last quarter, actually, because some of those bond holdings that we do have are showing capital losses.
Yep.
And so you can use it against, let's say somebody has a legacy position in a company stock that they've just held for 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't really want to own that stock anymore.
Yep.
But there's a huge capital gain against it.
Right.
Well, maybe you can actually offset some of that gain with a loss.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, and allow you to get the portfolio back in balance.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk about the different sources of income because they are different.
Yep.
So bonds are treated as interest income.
Yep.
And they're taxed at your full marginal rate.
Yep.
I don't know how many listeners we're going to have to this episode, Greg, because taxes aren't usually the driver of listenership.
True.
Right?
True. Although it's, for many people, it is kind of an important.
Well, it's
maybe
really important.
Maybe they leave it to their accountants to deal with, but. Yeah. Our point here being that there are things that you can do now that
right.
will make your accountant happy in the future.
Yeah. Okay, carrying on. So we talked about interest income. Eligible dividends. So if you have stocks that pay dividends, you could benefit from the dividend tax credit.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then capital gains is only taxed at half of what interest income is.
That's right.
So you only take 50% of the gain at your marginal tax rate. So they're all taxed differently.
Yep.
And that's why asset location, which we've talked about before, is really important.
Exactly.
So we want to own our interest-bearing fixed income assets, primarily in our RRSPs.
Yes.
Right? We want to own our higher growth equity investments in our TFSA.
Right.
Not TSFA.
No.
I'm not sure what a TSFA, but own your growth equity investments in your TFSA. And then your dividend holding or your dividend paying securities you can hold in your non-registered or what you'd call cash accounts or taxable
yes.
accounts, right?
Yeah. And by the way, when we talk about Canadian dividends, we're not suggesting that people just go out and buy dividend paying individual stocks for their portfolio. But if you own a diversified portfolio of stocks and Canadian stocks included, you're going to earn dividends just by virtue of owning those, those funds.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will earn dividends even if you don't specifically try to buy stocks that only pay dividends.
Yeah, the dividend question, the dividend conversation is one we've had for years.
Yep.
Just so everybody knows, dividends are just another form of return of capital.
That's right.
Right? So we're not suggesting having a dividend strategy. But if you just owned the market, you're going to collect the aggregate dividends.
Exactly.
Right? And if you own that, let's say you have it in a fund in your non-registered account,
yep.
well, you'll get to do the dividend tax credit on some of that income.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
Okay. What about charitable giving?
Yeah. So you know, there's different ways to that people choose to, you know, to give. And year end is always a good time to think about that, because charitable donations can be one of the most powerful tax efficient strategies available. So again, this is assuming that giving, you know, or donating is something you'd like to do. It's part of your values. And if you do decide that you'd like to give, then there's some more tax efficient ways to do that.
Got to be careful with that one though, too, because there's been a few sort of charitable structures over the years that haven't met the test of CRA.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, so if you think about, okay, well, I'm going to donate some cash to a particular charity. Well, if you sell the investment outright and then donate the cash, you might be on the hook to pay capital gains on the sale of that particular security.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you donate the security directly, the capital gains is not charged, and basically that goes away. And basically you still get the full donation tax credit. Mm-hmm. And so donating securities rather than selling them and donating cash can be an extremely powerful way of maximizing the benefit.
Sure.
To yourself. You still get to, you know, feel good that you're doing good by making a donation, but you're doing it in a very tax efficient way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can do that through a donor advised fund.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So think of that as your personal charitable foundation without all of the complexity.
Yep.
You make that donation into that donor advised fund, or DAF.
Yep.
As you say, you receive your full tax credit immediately. But the funds inside the DAF can even stay invested and grow tax-free while you decide where to give.
Yes.
So that's an important difference, right? So you're not donating directly to a charity.
Right.
You're donating into something you've set up.
That's right.
Then donates to the charity.
That's right. You know, so for a lot of people, there are who might earn a windfall in a particular year. So let's say you earn a windfall and you'd like to, A, donate to charity, and B, reduce the tax impact of that windfall.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is you can make a large donation to your donor advised fund in that year to offset, you know, the tax that you'd have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And then those funds can be invested for the long term. They grow tax free. They have to be distributed on a certain schedule. Usually it's 5% of the value of the fund per year as a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to, over time, you know, decide how you want those donations to be granted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a great way to not only, you know, sort of have the good you did by making that donation sort of spread out over many years, you can get your family involved as well.
Sure.
Because in many cases, these donor advised funds could last for decades.
Yeah. I mean, it can create a legacy of giving.
Yep.
Is basically what it comes down to,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about some of the reminders for some of the specific accounts. So you've got RESPs.
Yep.
Registered Education Savings Plan.
That's right.
You can contribute $2,500 per child, as long as they're under 18, of course.
Yes.
To get the full $500 government grant for the year.
Right. Yep. And just one other comment on RESPs. You can contribute more. In fact, you contribute up to $50,000 over the lifetime of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get the maximum grant, you only need to contribute $2,500 a year.
Yeah, and there's some math you might want to do around that. We've had people in the past that have maxed out their RESP contributions year one.
Yep.
Now they forego 17 years of grants by doing that.
That's right.
But they've done some math and said, well, if we put the $50,000 in today, the earnings on it will be far greater than the grants
Sure.
that we're giving up.
So, yeah, over 18 years of compounding, that can become a very large number.
Yeah, and everybody's in a different position
Yep.
on that. So
mm-hmm.
you've got RDSPs for those with disabilities.
Yep.
These are unmatched government incentives.
Yep.
They have up to a 300% matching program.
Yep.
So that's a really important one.
For sure.
You mentioned, we mentioned first home savings accounts.
Yep.
$8,000 a year.
Yep.
And then the other one for people that have, you know, that are over 71, 72, you know, taking your RIF minimum withdrawals by December 31st.
That's right.
Right? You have to take those.
Yep, exactly.
But you don't have to take them as cash.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a lot of investors that will just move their annual RIF payment to their non-registered account. And then they'll do things like fund their TFSA contributions from it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, what else?
Well, I mean, there's some corporate or high net worth strategies that some people may need to be considering. You know, so if you have an incorporated business, you might want to consider bonusing out retained earnings or looking at the dividend versus salary mix before year end, mm-hmm. because those kind of decisions need to be made. And it's good to contact your tax advisor to see what the right mix of bonuses and dividends, you know, should be.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure you review any shareholder loan balances at a level that can maximize the small business deductions. So you don't want to go through any passive income thresholds or things that otherwise might affect your tax. And for family trusts, you need to confirm all the income allocations and distributions. They need to be documented before a year end, and I believe they need to be paid out by the 15th of January or some mm-hmm. such thing. So there are some timing considerations if you have corporations and trusts that you need to be mindful of.
Yeah, and as we look ahead to 2026 and beyond, we want to be aware of the evolution of tax rules.
Sure.
Right? We've gone through a few different iterations of capital gains inclusion rates in our
yes.
careers.
Yep.
And alternative minimum tax changes, so yep. we want to be aware of those. We would suggest that people book a planning review with their advisor and or their accountant.
For sure.
Ideally, having your advisor working with your accountant is also a good idea.
Yep.
And, you know, taxes are one of the few things in investing that we do have some control over. Being aware of what you can donate,
yep.
where you can hold things, what tax rates are charged on different asset classes.
Yep.
That can affect your compounding rate, right?
For sure. So we talked about a little bit about the deadlines. I mean, for contributions like the tax-free savings accounts, the RESPs, TFSAs, RESPs, and the first home savings accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all December 31st. Mm-hmm. Likewise, charitable gifts of cash or securities, December 31st as well. RIF withdrawals have to be taken by December 31st if you're 72 years old. RSP contributions, those, as we said, 60 days after the end of the calendar year, so March 1st, 2026 will be the deadline for 2025 RSP contributions. And of course, personal taxes in Canada, the filing deadline is April 30th.
All important dates to know.
Yeah.
So just to close this one out, we're not accountants.
No.
Right? But tax is an important item that we talk about quite regularly with our clients.
Right on.
And we just want to make sure we're taking advantage of all of the programs and opportunities that we have to not avoid tax, but just to reduce it. I can't remember that saying. Which one's wrong? There's tax avoidance and tax...
evasion.
Evasion. All right.
Yeah.
So actually, let me rephrase that. We want to avoid tax, but we don't want to participate in tax evasion.
It's got to be legal. So
yeah.
So if you have any questions, I mean, call your advisor, call your tax advisor, your investment advisor, and just make sure that you're mindful of anything that can or should be done before year end.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay then.
Well, that's enough about tax.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals, and they have not been approved by, and are not necessarily those of, Q Wealth as a firm. This is not legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice, and should not be relied as such.